Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But, you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast.
Yate, hello, welcome to Native Art Voices of the Four Corners. This is your host, Vinaya Yazzie. Today we have another special guest, a silversmith and artist from Utah, Ernie Washi. Hello, Ernie, how are you doing today?
Oh, Yate, I'm not supposed to say Ernie in Seattle, Blandy, Utah, just Ernie. I'm a jeweler and a silversmith.
Well, thank you for joining us all the way from Blanding, Utah. And for those of you who are new to the community or don't know, we do have a Four Corners community of Native artists from all over our area here. And Blanding is one of the places where there are a lot of Native people that live, including the Ute people and the Navajo people. The first question I'd like to ask you, Ernie, is as a silversmith and as a Navajo artist, how do you think your art as a silversmith represents the Native people's culture in the Four Corners community?
Yes, I would think that the type of jewelry I make is always traditional type, like turquoise and silver with stamp works on it, like the traditional style, but the work that I do is mostly overlay now, but what I do is I take, more animals projects that I do. I also do a little bit of lab dairy. I try to carve into those stones to put some designs and make a little carving things on top, on the surface of the turquoise or other stones.
Okay, so you put a little bit of the Southwestern imagery, I guess, on some of the stones and in your overlay work. When did you learn to do silversmithing, Ernie? Did you go to school, or how did you pick up this art form?
Well, when I first started, my relatives around where I grew up, my relatives around there, they were making silver beads and selling those. And I thought, maybe I can give it a try. So I watch other people, my relatives, watch them do how they were making silver beads. After observing all that, I made my own tools out of whatever good steel I could find, and I made my own cap and die. That's how I started with the silver work. I had to learn how to solder as well. Using an old type of blowtorch that they had available back then.
Okay, yeah, that, you know, Ernie, that's a similar story that when I talk to people who do silversmithing, they say, you know, they had a family member that did it and they grew up seeing their family doing these metal working techniques. And so it's really nice to hear that, you know, you also were a part of having that tradition in your family. Making silver beads is a really long process when people do make those, because you have two pieces of a cylinder that have to come together to make the beads. And then you mentioned soldering. What does that mean, soldering?
It means sort of welding the two pieces together with another type of silver more like glue, if you would, but of course it has to be hot to get the solder to flow to seal the openings here and there in the bead. Of course, you have to control your heat in a way where you can get the solder to flow. If you're working with beads, you can get the half spheres soldered together that way. Or if you were working with the sheets, you solder in a bezel on, you still had to control your heat in a way. If you move it around, bezel to solder onto a piece of silver plate. If you weren't too careful, it overheated in one spot, then the bezel's a very thin sheet of silver. You you're not careful, it can melt pieces of that bezel and you have to start all over again.
Yeah, so it sounds like you have to have, you know, everyday experience to really get a hold of how to do proper soldering. Yeah, and I think that's pretty much a story about how all artists, you know, practice makes perfect, some people say, you know. And I really wanted to mention, for those of you who haven't been able to really, this is the way I see it, is contemporary Native silversmithing. I would say that about your work, Ernie, because it isn't like traditional Navajo silver work like people see it, you know, with the turquoise clusters and then the round circular designs. Ernie's work is a little bit more contemporary, and I've been able to see him, some of his work, in person. And so I really appreciate the kind of style that you do, Ernie, because, you know, it really does tell a story. Can you give us an idea about some of the subject matter that you have on your silver work?
Well, most of what I do now is use a process called overlay. So I do all the cutouts on one sheet of silver and then take that piece and then solder it together. A lot of my pieces are with animal images, like horses in different strides and wolves in different strides as well, and other types of antelopes and deer. Some of it are in the form of petroglyphs. Those are the images that I use.
Yeah, so some of you, like you mentioned, he does do the images like that, and they're really quite striking because they're very almost geometric in when you look at them. So, Ernie, thank you for sharing that. As a native, as an artist, and you do silversmithing, do you have an art studio? What is that art studio? How is it important to you?
I just have a back room where I set up as a work area for me. Not everything that I use can fits into that small room. I still have to do some work outside, like when I have to do some laboratory work, I have to do that outside, and I still have to do my buffering outside. It's best to do it outside so you don't get all that dust from the buffering into your lungs.
Yeah, and I'm glad you spoke about that, because there are some health precautions that you really have to stick to, especially as a silversmith. And I know potters and rock sculptors have to do this, because, you know, there is a lot of things that go on in the process of making jewelry, and you are working with chemicals and, you know, working with metals. So it's good, Ernie, that you're, you know, you do understand those things and keep your health, you know, intact. Because I know that there are some young artists now that are Native people who are kind of careless, and they're not really paying attention to, you know, their health and staying safe when they're making their jewelry or their other art.
Yes, especially if you're doing laboratory work where you have to grind stone, it's best to use a face cover or even do it outside, because especially if you're doing shells, grinding shells, that can intake a lot of those dust. It can accumulate in your lungs and can cause you a very big problem later on.
That is true. You know, you really do have to protect your health. So when you're working in an art studio or your art space, whether it be in your home or right outside your home, it's always good that you do wear a mask if you're using chemicals, which most artists do. We're using some type of material that could be toxic if we don't pay attention to it, you know. So I was also wondering, you know, it's 2023 now, and a lot of Native artists and all artists in general have really kind of started going back to doing art markets in the public and traveling again to different places where we were selling our art before the pandemic of 2020. Have you been able to go out and go back into the world and sell your art at art markets, or are you looking forward to doing any of those things?
I still plan on doing that. My first show that I participated in with the Bluff Arts Fair also corresponds with the Balloon Festival over there. That was just a one-day show, so that was sort of off to a good start. Towards the end of February, I'm going down to Las Cruces. They also have a German metal show down there that I go to. And after that, I'm March, I'm going over to Tucson. April, I'm heading up towards Salt Lake, a town called South Jordan. I'll be doing a show over there as well. So that's just some of the shows that I'm getting ready for now, building up my inventory for those shows.
Wow, that's really great to hear. I'm glad that you're back in it and that you're going to all these places that you mentioned. Yeah, you know, I think it's really important for people to understand that, you know, as independent artists and Native artists here in the Four Corners, you know, we do have a lot of traveling to do when we want to sell our work. You know, it's important that, you know, we're able to go places where people can see our artwork and collect it. And sometimes that means that we have to go outside of our community to do that. Just as you mentioned, you know, Ernie is going to be traveling within the Four Corners within the next few months to show his work and sell his work. So that's a really vital, important part of artists right now, especially Native artists, you know, because a lot of times we don't live in urban areas where there's, you know, a lot of people to buy our work. So that's one of the things that we really have to focus on. What I wanted to ask you next was, as a Native artist and independent person living as a silversmith, how were you affected as far as your business goes during the pandemic and the shutdown? Were you affected at all, or how did that work with you?
Of course, it affected my ability to have an income. Therefore, it was pretty slow during that time, not being able to go out to shows. But I managed to get by here, sell a few things from the house, and people would order things over the phone and try to stay busy working on the chores outside. So there was something that carried me over, was able to get through that.
Yeah, and that's a similar story that I've heard from other artists too, especially here in the Four Corners. A lot of them had a lot of time on their hands and they were able to create a big inventory when it was better out. And now, you know, we are sort of out of that time of that pandemic and everything is opening up again. And we're seeing how these existing art markets have decided to go on with the show, as some people say. Have you ever done any art markets within the New Mexico art community? Besides, you know, you said you're going to go to Las Cruces, but as far as like the Indian market or things in New Mexico?
I used to do that show, Tutka Festival, over in Farmington in September. And also recently I've started that Pathways up at Buffalo Thunder. If I get accepted again, this will be the third time going over there. I've never tried the Indian market. I heard it's too crowded, so I don't know. But maybe over half the artists are jewelers, so it's a tough competition to try to get into that.
Yeah, that is a pretty big market, and there are a lot of jewelers. And to be honest, a lot of them are Diné people, are Navajo people, because our Navajo people have really been able to hone this jewelry art craft of silversmithing and innovative steps in creating our designs. And, you know, there's a market for, you know, contemporary pieces too. Well, Ernie, I'm glad that, you know, you're doing these regional markets. And I've heard of the Pathways Market at Powaki Pueblo, and that's really an upcoming market. It's run by Native people. It's an indigenous run market by the Pueblos, and I think a lot of Native artists are really interested in that concept, because like Santa Fe Indian Market is mostly run by non-Native people. Although it's a very prestigious market, it's very high dollar as far as paying for your booth fee, and it's only a two-day show, whereas Pathways is a three-day show, and the booth fee is not as much as Santa Fe Indian Market. So I really favor that show too at Powaki Pueblo in August. If any of you are in the area, please visit that market in August of 2023. Ernie may be there. Ernie, thank you for sharing all that information you have as an artist. I think a lot of Native artists are very wealthy because of the knowledge and experience that they have in the arts culture. Being a silversmith and having images of animals of the high desert and desert areas, such as antelope and horses, how do you think your art jewelry tells a story of the people of the land? Like, how do you see your art being put out to the people?
You know, I have a quick response for that. I'll have to think about it and sort of philosophize about that. But I just made a bracelet that I sent to Santa Fe a couple of days ago. That person requested or wanted a bracelet with the running wolves on it. So I made that and sent that there over there. Somebody that wants to get into making jewelry, they need to get in touch with somebody or maybe your relative. Sit and watch. Don't talk. Just pick up the rhythm, a lot of rhythm that way, as to how you'll be able to do something. Of course, you're not going to be able to do something exactly the way your mentor is doing it, but that's a good way to start. Also, it helps you cut down on your material waste, especially if you're going to be doing silver. Of course, gold is even more expensive to work with.
I could imagine for those of people that work in gold. And that's really good advice, Ernie. You know, just sit and watch. And I feel like that's a old ways of teaching kids. You know, I remember when I was growing up, you know, my grandparents never let the kids talk. You know, they would always say, you guys don't need to talk. You listen and watch, you know. And I think that's an old teaching. I'm glad you shared that with us, Ernie. You just mentioned that you sent a bracelet off to Santa Fe. What do you hear your collectors or other artists or just people in the public, what do they say to you about your artwork?
Some of them, they bought some pieces from me, but every time they see me, they come by, they'll show me what they bought. And I bought this from Europe a couple of years ago, and said, of course, by then you're kind of dingy, but they'll tell me they wear it every day. Some piece of what I meant by that was tarnishes a bit, but they don't care about that. They just keep wearing it.
Yeah, they still appreciate the pieces, because I know probably a lot of them end up keeping it for years and years and then passing it down to their family members. You know, that happens a lot when people are collectors. They'll come back by your booth and make sure they show you, you know, they bought whatever they bought from you several years back. It's really a nice feeling, I think. I'm really happy that you were able to share part of your story about being an artist in our community, Ernie. I think our Native artists are very important to our community of New Mexico, Arizona, Utah, and Colorado. People travel from all over the world just to see our artwork and meet us as Native artists in person. And, you know, we have to really realize that, you know, what the work we do is important and that, you know, it's unique and it's part of our traditions. I'm really glad that you're still doing that, Ernie. I wanted to ask you a question about, you know, about Navajo. So I know I didn't ask you this question earlier, but are you able to share your Navajo clans with us today?
I can tell you what I was the maternal clan is, which is the sheep. My grandma used to, or my mom used to, they would tell us that our friendship started from somewhere from White Mountain or in that region over there.
In Arizona or White Mountain in Utah?
In Arizona. Typically in that area. So that's where clan is from.
Okay, and that's Deschutes, right?
From the Apache Nation.
I see. It's really interesting that's one of the clan stories you have. I think that's important for people to know too, that, you know, Navajos, we still identify ourselves in our matriarchal system by our mother's clan, which is passed down through the mother, through the female line. You know, there's always an origin story about where that clan came from. So thank you for sharing that, Ernie. I think it's important for the public to know, you know, because that's really who we are as Navajo people. We really are rooted to the land and places, or they call it cultural landscape. I look forward to seeing your work this year, Ernie. Maybe I'll see it in August at Powaki Pueblo. And I just wish you all the best in your creations and, you know, inspirations. And I wish you safe travels as you go all these places. I think it's just important that the work that you do. So I'm very glad to know you and also the people that you work with. Is there anything else you wanted to say?
When you want to do artwork, it's best to listen to the spirit that's where all the artwork comes from. You just have to listen to them.
Yes, great. Thank you for saying that and sharing that, Ernie. Thank you for talking to me today. I'm really grateful. And like I said, I wish you all the best in 2023, and we will see you somewhere down the road. Do you have a website or any place where people can look at your jewelry online?
Unfortunately, I don't. People always ask me if I have a website. My reason for not wanting to do that, but I'm sure some of my pictures of my work is out there on the internet and places. I don't want to do that because people tend to, you know, start copying. I'm sure it's already happening, but I just don't want to make it easy for them.
I understand that. You know, I guess for people who wanted to see your work, you could just Google Ernie Washi, and like he said, his name and probably a picture of him and his artwork is probably there on the internet.
There's some pictures up there, some of the images there on the internet.
Okay. All right. So thank you again, Ahiha, Ernie. Yes. Thank you for listening to Native Art Voices of the Four Corners. Have a great day.
Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.